Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
As we roll through the program, the biggest story. We are now 8 days away. 8 days away from the NFL draft. And there is abundant optimism throughout the land because this is the time where those of you who are diehard draftniks, and I would put myself in that category, this is the time where all of you sit around and debate alongside of your friends and your family who exactly your favorite team is going to take. And my 13-year-old in the house is a huge now budding draftnik. He's always, every time we're sitting down to eat a meal, he's always asking me like, hey, what do you think's going to happen here? What about the drama? Looking at mock drafts. And what I love to do, and I've told you guys this for a while, is I love to look at the gambling markets because this is a relatively new addition that we have to all of the noise surrounding draft expectations. And the gambling markets tell us a story, at least based on people having to put their money where their mouth is. In other words, it's easy for people to spout off all of their opinions out into the larger universe without having to put money down to back them up. So rather than the noise, I'm more interested in the dollars. And this has been a wild ride at the number three position ever since, essentially, the San Francisco 49ers traded up and locked themselves in, presumably, beyond it would be a monster upset if the 49ers were taking somebody other than a quarterback. And so given that we know Trevor Lawrence is going number one overall, and by the way, we talked about this just a little bit, but the absurdity of Trevor Lawrence's quotes in that Sports Illustrated story about how he had interest and concerns outside of football and it like wasn't his whole life and everybody's like, oh my God, this guy's not 100% committed to football. Now, you can really love a job and also have things that you're interested in outside of that job. In fact, that's what most healthy people do, even if they love their job, yet somehow in the world of football, it's turned into, hey, all you can care about is football. And if you have interest anywhere else, oh my goodness, this is a major cause for concern. So Trevor Lawrence going to go number one overall to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, I will say this. I am interested to see what the marriage is like between Trevor Lawrence and Urban Meyer. Because Urban Meyer is, in my experience, the kind of guy who only cares about football. And so with him now being the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, I think it's a great hire. But we don't know exactly how Urban is going to translate to dealing with adults and people on his team as opposed to kids where you're sort of the dictator and you can determine everything as a college football coach. NFL coaches have to be able to work with adults, with professionals, and they don't have the same ability to sort of control the narrative in the way that a college coach would. So I'm intrigued to see what that partnership is going to look like between Trevor Lawrence and between Urban Meyer. And I also think that Urban Meyer is smart enough, which is why he went to take the Jacksonville job, to know that no matter how good of a coach you are in the NFL, if you don't have a good quarterback, you don't win. And so Urban Meyer, throughout his tenure, certainly at Florida and Urban and Ohio State, has almost always had way better talent than the teams that he is playing against. And that's a credit to Urban because he recruited well and he brought in the right talent and everything else, and he won championships at both Florida and Ohio State. But the negative associated with that is in the NFL, that doesn't happen. You can draft well, but the overall talent differential between Team 1 and Team 32 is probably way less substantial. In fact, it almost always is than the overall talent differential between, let's say, Ohio State and I'm just tossing a team out here, not trying to make people feel awful, Minnesota, right? Like Minnesota, PJ Fleck has done a good job. The difference between the talent that Urban Meyer would have at Ohio State and Minnesota is more substantial than the difference between the number one team in the NFL and the number 32 team in the NFL. It just is. You can look at the lines. You can look at the odds maker perspectives, everything else. That isn't necessarily as seismic of a difference as it would be between top of the Big Ten heap and down near the bottom of the Big Ten heap. All right, you want to say Rutgers, the worst team consistently in the Big Ten? There you go. The difference between Ohio State and Rutgers is more substantial than the difference between the best team in the NFL and the worst team in the NFL. And so, will Trevor Lawrence be the guy who is going to return Jacksonville to decency? Or will he, like a lot of other number one picks, flounder? And here's a stat for you. In the past 40-plus years, do you know this? Only three guys who have gone number one overall. And I need to unpack this probably later in the week, but it's really kind of fascinating. Only three quarterbacks who have gone number one overall in the past two generations of football have won Super Bowls. Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, and Troy Aikman. That's pretty wild to think about. When you consider all the brilliant minds that are diving into the NFL draft every year, and all of the hours that they spend looking at every single possible tendril of factual importance, only three guys in the past two generations of football, even as we have increased the overall amount of attention we put onto the draft, three guys, two of them brothers, Peyton and Eli Manning. And remember, Eli got traded from San Diego to New York, so he didn't even win it for the team that drafted him. And Troy Aikman. That is it when it comes to number one overall draft picks at the quarterback position winning Super Bowls. I think that stuns people because we think of the number one overall pick as being the most likely when it comes to quarterbacks of being able to win a championship. The odds are incredibly low of a number one overall pick actually going on to win the Super Bowl. Now, we'll see whether Baker Mayfield, whether Kyler Murray, whether Joe Burrow. There are certainly a lot of number one picks that are still in the NFL draft and early in their career. We'll see whether they can change that, and Trevor Lawrence will become the latest number one pick to see whether or not he's going to be able to change that trajectory as well. So that is Trevor Lawrence to the Jags. We know that Zach Wilson is going number two overall to the Jets. There is zero uncertainty right now based on number one and number two. But at the third position, which also is going to impact, I think, substantially what happens after three, the odds markets keep rolling and changing and everything else. So the storyline here has been initially it looked like Justin Fields was going to be the pick. He was a fairly substantial favorite to be the number three overall pick for the San Francisco 49ers, for Kyle Shanahan. And then all the money came pouring in on Mac Jones. And Mac Jones at FanDuel went all the way out to over minus 300. That's a pretty big favorite as we were sitting a couple of weeks out on the draft. And then Justin Fields had his second pro day. And at FanDuel, he surged all the way back out to the lead. And now as we are sitting here on Wednesday morning, 8 days from the NFL draft, guess what's happened? There now is basically no favorite at all, and it's a total coin flip over whether the San Francisco 49ers are going to draft Mac Jones or Justin Fields. What does that tell us? Nobody knows anything about exactly what the 49ers are going to do. And it feels like there's been a lot of rumors that have been spreading that have led people to put their money down on these guys one way or the other, but there hasn't actually ended up being any consensus as to what the 49ers are going to do. They are keeping their cards very close to their vest. Why does that matter? Well, it matters in the larger context because if the 49ers are keeping their cards close to their vest, it makes it hard for the Atlanta Falcons to know how much demand there might be in the event somebody wants to trade up to four. And the team that a lot of people are talking about trading up to number four is the Denver Broncos. But what we don't know is which of these quarterbacks the Denver Broncos love. if Justin Fields is available, are they going to say, okay, we've got to have him and trade up in order to grab him? Or as you kind of look at this situation, are the Broncos only committed to Justin Fields, and are they going to not be able to make a move until theoretically draft day when we actually find out who goes number three overall? In other words, given the fact that we know one and two, when is it going to become a clear-cut decision as to what the 49ers are going to do at number three? We may not know until 8 days from now when the first round of the NFL draft actually gets here, which means the Atlanta Falcons, who it seems clear to me, if they were actually going to a draft, would go out and grab, beyond a shadow of a doubt, at least to me, it seems very, very likely that they would go out and grab Kyle Pitts, the tight end from Florida. But if they don't really know what exactly their options are going to be, do they want Pitts significantly enough that they would turn down the ability to drop back in the draft? Could the Falcons love Pitts and roll the dice and say, hey, we'll allow you to come up and take, if Justin Fields is still there, we'll allow you, Denver Broncos, to trade up and grab Justin Fields. We will then fall back, and we will be in a position where maybe we can come back up to get Kyle Pitts. Because if you look at the top of the draft, I still feel like the Bengals are going, even though Ja'Marr Chase is out there, and even though we know that he has a great rapport with Joe Burrow, I feel like the ability of the Bengals to block for Joe Burrow was such a flaw last year that at some level they're going to have to go offensive line, and that's why I think Penei Sewell is probably going to end up being the number five pick. So as you sort of do this mock draft in your head and think about what the situation is going to be, if I'm the Falcons, and I think this is an intriguing question, if I am the Falcons and I decide, you know what, maybe we could trade back and be in a decent position, if you feel like the Bengals are going to go at five, could you project what the Dolphins are going to do? I feel like the Dolphins would grab Kyle Pitts. And so if you are right now sitting there, if you are the Falcons, the question may well become, how much do you like Kyle Pitts, and is it worthy or not to make a move and potentially have to trade back? Here's the other thing. I'm not sure that Justin Fields might not fall down all the way to number nine for the Broncos if he is their guy, or Trey Lance is their guy. Because when you look at the, maybe there'd be teams that would trade up to get in front of them. But again, I think the Bengals are going to go offensive line, and I think Penei Sewell is probably the most likely outcome. I think the Dolphins have a very good chance to go get Ja'Marr Chase. I think they're going to try to get a weapon for Tua, and I would expect Chase is a big favorite to be the first wide receiver off the board. I would expect for that to be the move that they make. Lions are in an intriguing spot. I kind of feel like, given that they lost Galladay and all the different factors associated with Stafford going, that at seven they may want to go wide receiver. Panthers at eight, if they're committed to Sam Darnold, which I think there's a decent chance for, wouldn't stun me if they go offensive weapon there at wide receiver either. And then if you're sitting at the Broncos at nine, you may find yourself in a decent position where you still have Trey Lance and Justin Fields, or Trey Lance and Mac Jones, or whoever it is, available to you at nine without having to trade up. The fear I think you'd have to kind of weigh in is, would the Patriots make an aggressive move to try to get up earlier? Could the Washington football team try to make a move to get up earlier? The Bears, who have struggled at the quarterback position mightily for a long time. I don't think it's likely, but the Steelers, as they try to figure out the future beyond Ben Roethlisberger, there are a lot of different teams, even the Saints, that if they are in love with one of these quarterbacks, they could potentially make the move to try to get up and grab them. So everything right now comes down to the question of, what are the San Francisco 49ers going to do? What move are they the most likely to make? And it is indeed an intriguing one to think about. We will talk about all of this up next with Jeff Schwartz, former NFL offensive lineman who has been through a few drafts and free agencies in his day. What does he think the 49ers will do? What does he think the Falcons should do? And how excited is he for the return of the NFL draft? Plus, how did his family vacation to the Virgin Islands go? I think he's just gotten back. This is OutKick on Fox Sports Radio.
This is OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis.
Much to dive into with Jeff Schwartz, but first, what did you think of the Virgin Islands? Did you guys have a good time down in St. Thomas and on St. John?
Yes. Yeah, so actually, a listener of your show, I did your show last Monday with Jonas.
Yeah.
And I said I had a problem. I said, look, I have a problem. I was supposed to go to Turks and Caicos, and my son's passport had expired. I need some help. And I think it was one of your listeners tweeted me, like, hey, go to St. Thomas. Go to the Virgin Islands. You don't need a passport. I was like, that's genius. I called my wife, and we got to go to St. Thomas. It was great, man. We had the most fun. It was our first time with the kids on, like, a big international trip they remember. We went to St. Martin, like, 4 years ago. We did jet skiing. My four-year-old daughter went parasailing. That was her idea. She loved it. We rented a boat for the day. That was fun. We went snorkeling and did all the tours of the surrounding areas. We did, kayaking and water sports and pool. We got it in, man. It was very beautiful. It was easy. It was so easy. No passport, obviously. People were very kind and friendly. We loved it.
Yeah, I'm still licensed in the Virgin Islands as an attorney because that's where I went to practice right after I graduated from law school. So, and did you get over to St. John?
So we took the boat tour took us around St. John, but we didn't actually dock there. So we got to see like the old sugar cane mill and kind of the houses. Like the houses are like ridiculous. I mean, there was one on like the a corner of a bay that's like $28 million. It was it was crazy to see. I mean, Kenny Chesney had a house like on top of the hill that was still being rebuilt from a hurricane, and there was a resort that was got torn apart. We saw the whole island, we didn't go to St. John and set.
Yeah, St. John is utopia for people out there. I mean, the huge percentage of St. John is a national park that the Rockefellers bought back in the day. So there's relatively few developed parts of St. John, and at least I haven't done the official census since then, but I mean, it's small, right? St. Thomas has 50,000 people on it. St. Croix has about 50,000 people on it, and St. John has around 5,000 people on it. So you're talking about all three United States Virgin Islands only having like a population of around 100,000. And so it's a tiny, place in terms of number of people who live there, but it is truly beautiful. So I'm glad I haven't been back down in a long time. I want to go back and check it out, particularly St. John at some point. But you and your family, you had a good time.
It was great. And and St. John, I would imagine, probably not full capacity. I mean, people have those houses there. They probably just come for a month at a time and leave and go live somewhere else. So yeah, I think we're going to go back. Like, it was easy. It was an easy trip. The Ritz was great. And we had a good time.
Nonstop from Charlotte, right? You can fly right in. That's where I used to go through there all the time when I would come back and forth between Nashville. We'd have to stop in Charlotte, or Miami would be the location that often happened. All right, so let's go into the NFL draft. I was just talking about how I like to watch the odds market and the way that it moves and what exactly is going to be considered to be the expectation. And we know what's going on at 1 and 2. But what the 49ers are going to do at 3, the odds market from a gambling perspective has wobbled a lot of different directions. And basically, at this point, we're at a 50-50 line, the odds market would tell us, between Justin Fields and Mac Jones. Justin Fields was the favorite after his second pro day. And now Mac Jones is kind of coming back a little bit. What do you think the 49ers are going to do? And second part of that question, do you think Kyle Shanahan knows what he's going to do at this point?
Well, let's go to the second one first. I think that's important. So when you trade up to 3, you have an idea, basically, that you're going to choose between Mac Jones, Justin Fields, and Trey Lance, right? Like, I don't think you make that trade without knowing who you want. because you know that Zach Wilson is probably not going to be there. And maybe you do like Zach Wilson enough that if he falls to three, they'll take him the option. You know, Trevor Lawrence already tweeting about Jacksonville. Like, he knows he's going to Jacksonville. We all know he's going to Jacksonville. So I think you make the trade up to three, knowing who you want. Now, the question, obviously, is who you want. And, you know, those odds markets, it's really interesting because, you know, I think they're just trying to take money from both sides, which obviously is the goal. You know, it just flips based on who is at someone's pro day or, like, or what news there is. To me, here's the way I look at this, Clay, is that people say this. They say this. Kyle Shanahan's offense is so good, it turns a Matt Ryan into MVP candidate, who, by the way, is actually a really good quarterback and has elite traits. Not very mobile, obviously, but has an elite-level arm. It takes a guy like Cousins and turns him into a much better football player. Jimmy G, right, an average trait guy probably to an above-average quarterback in 2019. So, therefore, because they've taken these guys that don't have elite traits to, you know, to become – you know, upper echelon quarterbacks, that Mac Jones fits that. Mac Jones fits a guy that out of all the quarterbacks at the top of this draft doesn't have the top end traits, doesn't have the top end, top end, maybe elite upside. And so we're going to take Mac Jones because we know we can get him to play well in this offense. But wouldn't you want to take the guy who has elite talents, elite arm, arm talent, elite all this, because that should make him even better in your offense, because your offense is really simple on quarterbacks. So I don't understand the idea that they should take a lesser talented quarterback because it's just going to work well in the offense. Why don't you take the more talented quarterback? We saw this year Aaron Rodgers got a chance to play with Matt LaFleur in Green Bay in sort of this offense, the Shanahan offense. He was the MVP. So to me, again, the idea that you draft a lesser trait guy because it's worked with lesser trait guys before, well, it should work with guys who have great traits. And so I think Justin Fields should be the pick, or Trey Lance. They have better arm talent than Mac Jones. They're more mobile than Mac Jones. And, you know, they didn't play in this kind of, you know, system where you have the best offensive line in the country. You have three draftable wide receivers. You have a first-round running back. Like, they didn't get to play in this perfect system in college. And so, to me, those are the two guys you take ahead of Mac Jones. I think it will be Justin Fields.
Okay, if you are the Broncos, how do you think they're following this? Because there's talk that they may be interested in trading up, but they really can't make an official decision until they know who's actually going to be available. So the presumption seems to be that they like Justin Fields and that they would be interested in potentially coming up to four. So I want to give you the hypotheticals here. Let's presume you said you think they're going to take Justin Fields, but let's say they take Mac Jones. And you are the Broncos, and you are committed to the idea of getting up there as rapidly as you can to grab Justin Fields yourself. What do the Falcons do? Because if you look at the Falcons, and if they're convinced right now that Kyle Pitts is the best fit for them, are you willing to trade back and end up with somebody who isn't the best fit for you? Or if you're the Falcons, do you say, you know what, I appreciate the fact that there may be interest here, but given our current situation, the Falcons seem fairly solid at wide receiver, right? This is a deep wide receiver draft, so they don't necessarily want a wide receiver, and they may love Kyle Pitts. So how do you value that if you are the Falcons, and especially if you're a first-year coach and a first-year GM, where you know Kyle Pitts is going to be a home run? If you trade back to nine, you're not sure you love anybody there where the Broncos are. What do you decide to do?
So the Falcons have their most fun in the draft, at least right now, what they can do, right? So, you know, a lot of it hinges on what to do with Matt Ryan. If they feel that Matt Ryan still has a couple years left, I think he does. And we saw what Arthur Smith did with Ryan Tannehill. Now you have Matt Ryan who, you know, he can still throw the ball. That's not a problem. You know, not very mobile, obviously, but you don't need a mobile quarterback to run the offense Arthur Smith wants to run. And so if they determine that Matt Ryan is their guy for the next couple of years, which I think they should make that determination, then number four, they should trade out at number four. I think you're going to get a godfather offer from the Broncos to move to four, or the Panthers possibly. I know they have Darnold. Or, you know, let's talk about Washington really wanting Trey Lance or Justin Fields as well. To me, you make that trade at four, you move back, and you really never go wrong moving back. You can still get yourself a great player at 12 or 9 or 8, wherever you want to move back to. You know, they need help on defense. Get a Patrick Surtain or get the kid from a Horn, the corner from South Carolina. Kyle Pitts would be great. I don't think anyone would pass up on on the idea of how great he would be. But you need draft picks. You need to continue to build that roster up. And to me, trading out of four is the way to go. Now, if they determine that they want a quarterback, then just stay at four and draft Justin Fields if he's there, or Trey Lance if he's there. But I think it'd be smart to back out of four, get more draft picks, get more assets, and get yourself a defensive player later in the first round.
What do you think the Bengals are going to do? You know offensive linemen well. Penei Sewell, obviously, is from Oregon, where you went. If you were the Bengals, I know that Joe Burrow has a really good relationship with Ja'Marr Chase, who is expected to be the first wide receiver off the board. But if you are the Bengals, do you feel like they have to go offensive line, given that Joe Burrow was obviously beaten up quite a bit in his rookie year and suffered what was a pretty devastating knee injury that it appears, to his credit, he's going to be able to be back from? At least he's posing in the new uniform reveals, and he seems like he's pretty much fully recovered. But in your mind, is the Bengals having to go offensive line like a foregone conclusion?
Well, the research has shown, and if you can just look at it, I mean, without even kind of the research, but just, you know, with your own eyes and what you're, you know, knowing the history of the draft, it's much harder to find an elite level tackle later in the draft. You can find elite level wide receivers all through the draft. And
in fact, there's a good, sorry to cut you off, but I'm going to talk about this at some point this week. If I don't do it today, I've got some graphics. There's virtually no difference between the receivers that have gone in the first round and the receivers that have gone in the second round in terms of production. Yeah. In fact, I'll hit you with this right now. I'm glad you brought it up, because I do think there's unpacking of this little nugget that I grabbed to be able to talk about this week, and maybe I'll do it right after you as well. But when you actually look at the numbers here, Calvin Ridley, DJ Moore, Mike Evans, Amari Cooper, Corey Davis, Brandon Cooks, Marquise Brown, and Odell Beckham. Those are the first round wide receivers of late that have been the most productive. Second round wide receivers that have been the most productive: Devontae Adams, AJ Brown, DK Metcalf, Michael Thomas, Allen Robinson, Deebo Samuel, Juju Smith-Schuster, Jarvis Landry. To me, the second round guys are more productive over the last 5 years of the draft than the first round guys.
Yeah, and I think even the first wide receiver taken every year does not end up being the best wide receiver. We saw last year, obviously, Henry Ruggs go the first to the Raiders, and, you know, the Raiders, I don't think anyone would say they're the best drafting team in the world, but they took him as the first guy, and then you end up with, you know, Justin Jefferson being the best wide receiver, you know, at least in year one. So to me, it's draft the offensive lineman. I know Bengals fans say, hey, we signed Riley Reiff. Yes, but you signed Riley Reiff to a one-year backup deal. 1 year, $7 million is what you pay a backup offensive lineman who's a veteran. You don't pay that guy to be your starting left tackle. So to me, it's about protecting Joe Burrow. You can never go wrong having too many good offensive linemen. There's literally nothing bad happens to your team if you have too many good offensive linemen. You can have too many good wide receivers, and you don't win football games. You need to have the offensive line set. I would draft Penei Sewell at number five and draft a wide receiver in the second round.
Do you like the way that the draft is broken up now? I got to admit, I love it. The Thursday first round, because I think it leads to a lot of drama starting off the second round, where people can sit around and say, oh, this guy's still out there. And I think it gives teams a chance to take a breath and decide to reset their draft board and everything else. It's not as much of a frenzy. So you got the Thursday first round, second and third on Friday, and then the rest of the draft on Saturday. I think it's a vast improvement, even though I've always been a draft junkie and I used to like to sit down and watch it kind of all day, Saturday, Sunday. I think the NFL has kind of hit on a gold mine here.
I think it's great because the first night of the draft, it's so hectic, right? I mean, look, we know who the first pick is. And, of course, the one thing I hate about it, though, is that Jacksonville's going to take all 10 minutes of
For television ratings purposes,
Yes. And then the Jets will take all 10 minutes to pick their guy. So, you know, to me, it's a perfect event for television, right? Because you have the drama, the clock, the fan base is in there. I'm glad it's going to be back in. I think the addition of putting it in different cities has been great, we saw what happened in Nashville a couple of years ago. Like, it's been huge. It's been a great idea. Cleveland's going to love having the draft in their town. And I love it. I think it's great. Again, there's if you do the, you know, the first two rounds on the one night like it used to be, I think you lose kind of the luster of the first round, the drama in it, and it's exhausting. Like, I'll be covering it for Fox Sports on the digital side. Like, it's a long night. It's a four-hour, five-hour draft, and to have a second round on top of that is just makes it even worse. So I love the way it's done now. Round one, then the next two rounds on Friday, and the rest of the draft on Saturday. The NFL, man, NFL, you know, people hate on the NFL. I get it. You know, some people don't like the way it's run, but they have found ways to maximize. And I think they're going to have huge ratings this year. You look around the sports world, ratings have been down across the board, I think. But I think it's going to be a huge, huge night for the NFL on Thursday.
You have talked, I believe, to a lot of the different offensive linemen in this draft as part of your the sort of sit-down that you're doing with a lot of these different guys. Who have you met and you're like, oh, man, like, you can watch him on tape, but you're like, this dude is going to be a really, really interesting addition to a locker room. He's going to fit in well. Like, who impressed you the most just kind of from a sit-down and have a conversation with them in conjunction with the tape that you saw as well?
Yeah, so there's a D3 kid from Wisconsin Whitewater, Quinn Miners, and he had to pay to go to training camp. He had to pay $350 to go play football in the summer because they had to pay for, like, you know, like a spirit pack, essentially, right? Like, they had to pay money to play football. And this kid loves ball. And, you know, he in the offseason, he'd go to his uncle's, like, you know, island, and he would lift, he'd work at his like little bed and breakfast, and he would lift lumber and gas cans and like do all this work around the thing. He just loves ball. A little undersized, 6'2" but dude, if you draft him, you're going to love his energy. You're going to love his work ethic. He's a guy that wants it, right? He comes from a D3 school. He played really great the Senior Bowl, like, out of nowhere. He didn't play the entire season. They didn't have a season in D3. And so the Senior Bowl, played really well. He's a guy that you're going to want to root for. The other guy, too.
Where might he go? Where might he go, by the way, Quinn?
He's probably a second-round pick. He'll play center somewhere. You know, centers most often, and we've seen more centers go in the first round lately, but most centers go in the second round and third round, especially the top. This year, maybe Landon Dickerson or Creed Humphreys kind of creeps up there. Possibly Landon, if he didn't tear his ACL from Alabama, he probably is a first-round pick, and he played guard as well, which helps, I mean, his projection. So Quinn's probably a second-round pick, third-round pick, depending on kind of where the centers end up going. And then, you know, Trey Smith from Tennessee, who I'm sure you know pretty well, you know, his story with his blood clots and his mom passing away, he's a guy you want to root for, man. The things he did in the community in Tennessee, in Knoxville, his attitude, and again, overcoming a lot of obstacles and adversity. He's a quiet kid, man. He just pancakes the thing. I love rooting for Trey. So I think those guys are a couple guys that maybe not as well known, but have great stories.
We'll talk to you next week, my man. I can't wait. 8 days from now, the NFL draft. Jeff Shorts, appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Love it. Take care, bud.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Still a lot more coming in your direction that we should be able to have some fun with, but I love, you guys know this, I am a draftnik. I'm all in on the NFL draft. We are now 8 days away from the first round of the NFL draft. I've been breaking down all the different drama surrounding the decisions that are out there to be made by the respective NFL teams. And one of the decisions that's going to have to be made is at the wide receiver position, because there are a bevy of wide receivers in this draft that we feel comfortable are going to be first rounders. In fact, I am looking right now at the latest numbers from FanDuel as it pertains to where guys are going to get drafted. and who's going to be the first draft pick at the position. And I'm going to unpack this a little bit more in the third hour, but Ja'Marr Chase is now a massive favorite to be the first wide receiver taken in this draft. I think it's likely that he's either going to go to Cincinnati Bengals, depending on what the Bengals do. Are they going to go offensive tackle with Penei Sewell, or are they going to go wide receiver with Joe Burrow's old teammate in Ja'Marr Chase? Ja'Marr Chase all the way out to minus 950. This matters, by the way, for the Dolphins at 6, because I think there's a strong likelihood that if the Bengals go with their expected pick, which I think is Penei Sewell, if they do that, then I think Ja'Marr Chase is going to end up with the Dolphins. But how are these guys going to pan out, and what does the data tell us about this? Okay, Ja'Marr Chase, big favorite to be the first wide receiver off the board, followed by Devontae Smith and Jaylen Waddle, both Alabama wide receivers. And then you've got Rashad Bateman, who is way back down further on this list, Kadarius Toney, Terrence Marshall Jr., Rondell Moore, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and Tylan Wallace. Those are the guys that are projected to be first and second round picks in the NFL draft this year. Now, what is interesting about this is, historically, there has been virtually no difference in the last 5 years between the guys that go in the first round and the guys that go in the second round. So, is Ja'Marr Chase, for instance, going to be wildly better than, throwing it out, Rondell Moore, or a guy that is sort of moving up the draft boards in a fairly substantial way? I think Elijah Moore, wide receiver slot guy out of Ole Miss. There are, I think, a lot of really intriguing storylines to follow here when it comes to the best possible picks at wide receiver. And what I would ask you is this. We know that Joe Burrow and Tua need offensive help, right? The question for the Bengals is, do you go offensive tackle or do you go wide receiver? And also, if you are the Dolphins, do you end up making the choice to go with Ja'Marr Chase if he is there at 6, or could the Dolphins be interested in trading back again because there may be somebody interested in coming up and grabbing Trey Lance? I'm going to talk a little bit about this in the third hour of the show, the difference between wide receivers in the first round and the second round and how they have performed over the course of the past 5 NFL drafts. Pretty good trend line to suggest that you get just as good of wide receivers in the second round as you do in the first. Given how many talented wide receivers there are in this draft, could it make more sense to trade back if you are in the wide receiver market? Let some of these other teams rush up to go after quarterbacks and other position players and go ahead and go back and draft and get the same quality of player. That's what the data might well suggest. Encourage you to go sign up for the podcast. Search out my name, Clay Travis. Search out my show, Outkick. Go sign up. Go give us 5 stars. Will Cain, we're rolling through busy third hour of the program. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.